Over to you, Pastor Philpott.
All right, well, good evening, everybody. Lovely to be here down in this SEC, SEC, STC, there we go. I appreciate Pastor Sophia to invite me to be with you guys tonight. As you mentioned, we definitely were study buddies when we were at Newbold together. We sat through many a Greek lesson, and many times we're in the library learning Greek, or trying to at least learn a Greek. It probably wasn't my strongest subject at Newbold, but certainly we had a lot of fun along the way, learning and growing and developing a ministry together. As I've been introduced, my name is Joe, and I'm our conference's communication and media director. I'm also a husband of one and a father to one as well. One little two-year-old who doesn't like sleep at the minute, so which means mum and dad don't get much sleep, which is always a lot of fun, isn't it? Now, I appreciate the subject that pastors asked me to speak on tonight, and I also recognize that it's one of those subjects that excites some and sends others to sleep. If it was my mother in the congregation today, she'd definitely be one of the latter, maybe getting an extra nap this evening. So what I'm going to try and do is I want to tackle the subject maybe from a slightly different perspective. I want to look at and we'll see how we get on, but I also want to try and make it as practical as possible. A bit of theory in the beginning and a bit of practical in the second half. So I'm going to share my screen at the same time. There's a couple of things I just wanted to share with you guys this evening. There we go, I can't see my play button. So I want to ask this question, right? This big word, contextualization. What does this word mean to you? Anybody have any ideas what the idea of contextualization means?
It's the correct application at the time.
Yes, at the time, and I like the use of that phrase. I like that. Anybody else?
Yeah, in context, our educational sort of capacity.
Sure. The process of contextualization is, it begins, first of all, trying to understand what something meant in its original context, the original environment, the original situation. To understand it first and foremost in its primary setting, to take from it what we need to take from it, then to apply it in a different context, in a different situation, or in a different environment. And we do this all the time when we study the scriptures or we study any of Ellen White writings. We're always contextualizing it, even if we don't realize what we're doing. Because we're always asking this question of, what does it mean for me? What does it mean for me? But it always begins with first understanding something in its original context. So let me give you a strange example. Maybe it's something you've heard of, maybe it isn't. But Ellen White, in her writing, she gave a teaching in which individuals were instructed not to purchase and use bicycles. Now, if you've not heard that before, it might seem like a really strange thing that she taught against. Like, what has Ellen White got against bicycles? Two wheels, a bit of metal, and it takes you from place A to place B. But it's always about context. It's understanding what she was writing in that original setting, in that original environment. And in her day and age, some 100 plus years ago, bicycles were a new invention, and they were ridiculously expensive. And so her teaching against bicycles was actually a point of stewardship, was a point of money management, a point of not spending exorbitant amounts of money on something that just isn't necessary. The equivalent in today's day and age would be, is I'm sure if she were to live in our name, £30,000 on a Rolex watch. Like, it's just an excess. It's just not necessary. And so what we do is we understand her teaching on bicycles in her original context, to take the principle, to take the application from it, and then to apply that in today's day and age. We take that principle and we understand it in the 21st century. Now, to give a different example, to give it a different example, and at the risk of sounding crude, but I see the role of adults this evening, Ellen White encouraged frequent intercourse. She encouraged frequent intercourse, and not in a marriage context. She often encouraged frequent intercourse with as many people as possible, at different points, whenever you could. That sounds really strange, because we think she teaches a certain thing, but the key thing is to understand the context of what she said. Now, some 150 years ago, in her day and age, the word intercourse didn't have the same meaning as it does today. Certainly it had a sexual connotation, which, if I were to use that word in any sentence, people in today's day and age, we understand that to mean a sexual interaction. But in her day and age, it was just a conversation. An intercourse between two people was a conversation, a discussion, a dialogue between two people. That's why she always encouraged them, because she encouraged people to connect with others, to befriend others, to get to know others, to share the gospel with other people. Hence why intercourse was something that was encouraged in her writings. And she used that word explicitly on a number of occasions. But it's understanding the original context to take the principle and apply it in today's day and age. And we do this all the time, whether it's with writings by Ellen White or in scripture, because we're always asking that question of what does it mean to me? It was written 2,000 years ago, 2,500 years ago, 3,000 plus years ago, and we ask that question, well, what does it even mean to me today? What relevance does it have for us? And that process of answering that question is the process of contextualization. Now, to give an example of a time that I got it really wrong, I was fresh out of Newbold. I didn't have my big sister there looking out for me, making sure that I didn't say or do anything too daft. Sister Sophia, Pastor Sophia, I should say, she wasn't there looking out for me. And so there I was in my first church as an intern pastor. And the church was majority Zimbabwe, like 95% plus Zimbabwe. And we had a wonderful time in that church. Like, my wife and I, we just had a beautiful time in that church. And if truth be told, if we were given the opportunity of going back to that church, we would go in a heartbeat. The people were wonderful. The ministry opportunities were wonderful. We did a lot of evangelism things. The youth work was great. There was just so much going on in that church. It was a vibrant church. And I remember I was there about maybe 2 months at this point. And I'm preaching on a particular subject on Sabbath morning. The church is full. There's maybe 120, 130 people there. You can't get a seat. And I'm preaching on this particular subject, and I tell this story from when I was growing up as a kid, in which we used to always have cups of tea and biscuits. And we would always, as kids, dunk our biscuits in tea. Now, I have vivid memories when I was like 6, 7, 8 years of age, as a child, having bourbons on a Sunday morning at 7 o'clock before mom and dad are up. We're there, sat in front of the TV, me and my sister, and we're dunking 4 or 5 biscuits in a cup of tea. I have vivid memories of those experiences. I wasn't born into an Adventist family. Now, I'm telling this story about this particular occasion, biscuits, tea, that sort of thing, and I get to the punchline, I tell the punchline, and there's no reaction. Like, it goes down like a lead balloon. And I'm not telling it because I expect everybody to be rolling around in laughter. That I'm not expecting people to think this is the funniest joke that a pastor has ever told in church. Like, I don't think it was going to ever get that sort of reaction, but I was expecting a reaction because I intentionally told it because I wanted to ground this biblical truth in the minds of the listeners by telling this story that I thought was at least slightly comical because it was something silly or daft that I did as a kid. And I thought it was going to be a great way to illustrate this biblical principle. But the audience didn't get it. People just didn't get it. It went straight over their head. Now I'm trying to communicate and I'm trying to contextualize the gospel through the use of this story, but I probably said it in the wrong context. Now if I went to Leamington Church or maybe Grantham Church or one of these other churches where there's it's white majority, individuals in that church, they would have got that story and they would have loved that story. But I was telling it in the wrong context. I inadequately contextualized that spiritual truth. Now we do. Well, I'm just going to stop my sharing my screen for a second. Just whilst I'm going to share some other stuff with you in a minute. Now we do this all the time as Adventists. Now when I was at Newbold, Newbold is a very diverse environment, very culturally diverse. At least when Pastor and I were there, they did a student survey, and it was found that there were over 50 different nationalities represented at the college. And that's like a quarter of the world's population, very diverse. And I found that I was enunciating my words a lot more because people just didn't get my slang. They just didn't understand what I was saying at times. And people would just laugh, and I'm like, I'm not sure why you're laughing, but it's that awkward laugh because they don't really understand what I'm saying, but they don't want to say that they don't understand because they're trying to be polite. It was like a lot of those conversations. So I'm enunciating my words. I'm trying to speak properly and cutting out that slang. Now, if I go and spend time with my family, my parents, like the proper local slang comes out in my talk. Like it's called yam yam where I'm from in the Midlands. And it's like, where y'all going? You're all that kid. And it's very common, very, and when I'm with my family, that really comes out a lot more, that slang. And I'm sure it's the same with you. I sit with my wife. So my wife, my mother-in-law, she's Jamaican, right? And my wife speaks like the queen. You know, she says grass and bathroom. She speaks really well. She was, you know. But when she's with her mum, that's when the patter really comes out. And so we change how we communicate based on who we speak to. And you think about it in church, right? We're continually contextualizing the gospel. When we teach our children the gospel, we teach it differently to how we teach our adults. And so we're really blessed in the Adventist church that we have a whole array of different Sabbath school classes. There's a Sabbath school class for 4-year-olds, for 14-year-olds, as well as 44-year-olds. And depending on your age, we simplify or we make more complex the gospel because we're communicating it differently. And we do that based on age. We also do based on demographic, various different demographic variables. And so we teach it a little bit different based on the part of the world that you live in because different stories, different items, different things mean different things in different languages and different cultures. So we're constantly contextualizing the gospel, but what that doesn't mean is the gospel changes. The gospel never changes. We believe in a God that was and is and will always be the same. We believe in a God for all of eternity, is a God of love, a God who exemplifies grace and mercy and hope, a God who even on Calvary both beautifully exemplify love and judgment, mercy, all at the same time. But how we communicate to a 4-year-old is different to how we communicate to a 64-year-old. How we package the gospel, how we contextualize the gospel, how we communicate the gospel varies. I've been privileged, maybe like some of yourselves, to have gone to different parts of the world, and you do church in different cultures. And, you know, I've been to Zimbabwe and Nigeria. I've been to Eastern Europe, Western Europe. I've been to Scandinavian, other places. And you see the gospel, you see church played out slightly differently. We always sing the same hymns. And there are some really core things to us as Adventists that are always the same. But you also see some nuances, slight differences. That's just how contextualization works. Different for different people, but at the fundamentally, we're all the same. 28 fundamentals believe in a God of love and a God who cares unconditionally for us. Now, you're probably sitting there thinking, Joe, what has any of this got to do with technology? What has any of this got to do with technology? And like I said, I wanted to share a little bit of theory just to give a little bit of depth to those who may not be interested in technology, but maybe are interested in the study of scriptures, hermeneutics, etc. And it gives you a little bit of some of that in case the rest of it will go over your head. But the process of contextualization is a process of taking something and communicating it in a way that the receiver will readily understand it and will readily receive it. And you think about love, right? You know, the 5 love languages by Gary Chapman, something that probably many of you have heard of before, this idea that we receive love differently as different people. Some of us are very tactile. Some of us like to receive gifts. Some of us like words of affirmation. We receive love. We communicate and give love different based on who we are, our characters, our upbringings, our experiences. And that all shapes us in different ways. But today we live in the 21st century. And so we're asking the question, how do we contextualize the gospel in today's day and age? When we look at history and the development of media, in the 1800s, you had the introduction of print media, newspapers, journals, magazines. You then have in the 1900s, the introduction of radio and television, broadcast media. And then you come into the 2000s, you have digital media, social media, web podcasts, blogs, radio station, digital radio stations, mobile apps, etc. And over the years, media has adapted. How we mass communicate has changed, but fundamentally what we communicate hasn't changed. And really core to who we are as Seventh-day Adventists from our inception back in the 1800s is using the latest technology to communicate to the masses more effectively. And we have printing houses, and then we had television stations and radio stations in the 1900s, but now we're in the 2000s, and we're asking the question, well, how do we use today's technology, especially digital media, to communicate the gospel to others? Let me share a couple of quick statistics for you. There are 4 billion people right now on the planet who have access to the internet. 3 billion of those use social media on a regular basis. On average, a person spends about 2 hours a day on social media, and over the course of a lifetime, they spend over 5 years of their life using social media. And this is when they're sat on the bus on the way to school. This is when they're sat on the toilet and they've got a few minutes to kill. Back in the day, you'd flick through a magazine or you read the back of a shampoo bottle. Today, people are scrolling through on their phones. We're just constantly connected. Now, we did a survey in the NEC and we found that the statistics for society is very similar to the statistics in our churches. Our members are using their phones to consume information and content, sermons, videos, music, in the exact same way as people who aren't Adventists. Maybe they just listen to different things. A couple of statistics on the UK. 98% of people are active internet users. 89% of people use the internet on their mobile phones, and 84% of people, 8 out of 10 people, are active on social media. And the perception is, and maybe the misconception is, the myth is, that only young people use social media, but the reality is everybody does. Everybody does. My granddad uses the internet, and God bless his soul, he's pretty slow when he's using it. And he'll often call, my granddad is like 2 minutes around the corner from my house. And so he'll often call me, there's an issue with this or there's an issue with that, but he's using it. My mom uses Facebook. And whilst my mom may use Facebook and my cousin may use Snapchat, they use different platforms, but they're both using social media because we just like to speak to people in America or the Caribbean, or we speak to people all over the world through Facebook Messenger. We're constantly using our phones and technology to consume. 84% of people use YouTube on a regular basis, 75% use WhatsApp, 56% Instagram, 45% Twitter. And I can't see the statistic because the pictures are in the way of your beautiful faces, but I think the last one is TikTok. It ticked up, 34% was that. Lovely, thank you, Pastor. Let me go back a second. So I say all of that to say, how we communicate the gospel, we need to contextualize the gospel and put it in a way that people are readily accepting it, readily using it. Now, the thing is, we can talk all day long about what the church should be doing, right? I'm sure if you and I were to sit down in a room and talk about all the things that the church should be doing but isn't doing, I'm sure we're going to come up with a whole list of things. It's easy to be critical of the church, but we're just going to park the conversation for a second. I mean, today, before we started, I'm in a hoodie today because I'm actually at the media center. The NEC have a new media center, and we've been here all day just doing different things and prepping equipment and blah, 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 whatever. And I was hoping to have gotten home this afternoon to have gone and changed into something a little bit more presentable. So do forgive the more casual attire this evening. But I don't want to talk about the established church. I want to talk about how can I come tomorrow morning, 9 a.m., how do we use technology? All right, we're not talking about abstract or theory anymore. We're not talking about what they should do, what this president should do, or what that pastor should do. What we're talking about is what can you do and what can I do? And there's a couple of things that I want to share with you, just to try and make this as tangible as possible. The first is, and this may sound obvious, but educate yourself on at least the basics. Like, if you want to be able to get involved in this conversation, it begins with first learning a little bit about it yourself. And you may be thinking, well, what is it? Where do I even start? You know, there's so much out there. There are so many different devices, and there are so many different apps and so many different social media platforms that I can get access to. And it's not about learning everything there is to know about everything out there. But even if it was just maybe Facebook or maybe YouTube, it's just learning how these things work. Maybe how is it that I can share a website with a friend or with a family member? Just really thinking about the basics and maybe looking at, well, what is it around the world? What digital resources, what videos and sermons are out there produced by the Seventh-day Adventist Church that I could share with other people? So it's really just familiarizing yourself with this space. And it may seem scary, but just pick up your phone and start trying things and experimenting with it and having some fun. I know when I talk to my dad, and he's a bit of a technophobe, and the thing that I always reassure my dad about is there's nothing that you can do on a phone or on your computer that can't be undone. You know, if you did something and it doesn't work very well, somebody can undo it for you. It's not that difficult. It's not like building a house and you knock down the roof. There's no undo button in that situation, but there is on a computer. So spend that time and familiarize yourself with it. And yeah, let me just begin then. The second is be a supporter. And again, this might sound like a really obvious statement, but I've been to churches where they discourage our young people from using technology to communicate the gospel. And it's a scary world out there. And sometimes when we're afraid of things, and when we don't understand things, what we do is we put distance between us and them. And we don't understand that, and so you keep that over there, and I'm going to be over here. I don't like that, so you go over there, and I will stay over here. And we distance ourselves from things that we either don't understand, that we're afraid of, or things that we don't like. And yet, for our young people who are, their world is defined by technology. It's how can they have a healthy relationship with it? And some people, there's extremes, right? Some people, like, they don't educate their children or their young people around technology, and they're just like, whatever they will do is what they will do. And some people go to the other extreme, which is like, you can't have anything. You can't have a phone until, you know, whatever age you are, and you can't spend any time in front of it. And so there's two ends of the spectrum. But how do we teach a balance? How do we encourage our young people to use it in a healthy way, in a spiritual way? And so how can we be a supporter? How can we be a supporter? We can't be a supporter if we don't understand at least the basics. I'm a big Liverpool fan. I'm a huge football fan. I'm just a sports guy in general. You know, I can watch a game of tennis or cricket and sit there for the best part of a day and just really enjoy myself. My wife will think I'm just the strangest person in the world just watching these guys hit a ball around for a few hours. And I know the rules in detail when it comes to like rugby. Rugby was my sport growing up, or football, and probably not so much on cricket, but I still love it. And I still know enough to follow and to get involved. And I think it's the same sort of thing when we're talking about technology. The third thing I want to share, though, is this app called Adventist Teams. So it's an app that was developed by the General Conference of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, and it was released a couple of years ago. It was released last year, a test version of it, and they're really trying to push it forwards this year. Now, Adventist Teams is the equivalent of a social media app for the Adventist Church. And so when you download that app, what you'll be able to see is you'll find sermons and videos and all sorts of different content on there that is produced by different churches or ministries or conferences or unions across the world church. And so what you can do is, once you've downloaded the app on your iPhone or your Android phone, and you sign up, it's free of charge, there's no cost, And you're going to be able to scroll through all this really good content that is produced by a Seventh-day Adventist entity. And so, you know, I've heard some wonderful testimonies of people that have been, that have found content on this app, that they've shared it with their friends or their family. So there's one particular story, one particular story of a lady, and she came across a set of videos on this app that was produced by this ministry specifically supporting single parents. And it was like a conversation, a round table by these three or four ladies, and they're just talking about being an Adventist, being a Christian, but also being a single parent, and how that is for them, how it has been, their journey, their experiences, the ups and the downs, and it's really quite a raw, kind of authentic conversation that they have. And so this Adventist lady, she's seen this on this app called Adventist Teams. Let me actually show you a picture of it. This is what the app looks like if you were to search for it on your iPhone. And so what this Adventist lady was, she'd seen this video series, and then she shared it with her non-Adventist friend, who is also a single mom. Her non-Adventist friend, she watches a number of these videos. One conversation leads to another, and now she's a Seventh-day Adventist. Now I'm just kind of really simmering down a story, her journey that took several months into just 30 seconds. But there's some fantastic resources on there to help whet your appetite when it comes to digital evangelism. It's free of charge, really easy to use. And I'm sure that if your pastor has already signed up, and she does sign up, and what she can do is she can invite you all. She'll be the team leader, your church leader, and you'll all be part of her church community on the app. And then you'll be able to encourage each other and pray for each other and send reminders to each other. And I send it to a few of my church members and friends that I have, and we kind of share it together occasionally and encourage one another. And it's just a great way, digitally using our phones, to find good, wholesome content that can be shared with other people. It's a wonderful, wonderful resource to use. And obviously, I've kind of touched on this point of sharing with friends and family. Now, if I can kind of caveat this point with a statement, though, you have to be careful with what you share. There's a lot of good stuff out there, but there's a lot of fake stuff out there. And I'm constantly bombarded on my social, on my my WhatsApp, of videos that are fake, of news articles that are fake, from well-intended people. Before you share, just do a little bit of research on that news story or that advert, whatever it might be. Just make sure that it's not some spam whatever with some malicious meaning behind it. There's a lot of stuff out there that just needs our attention before we share it with other people. Find wholesome content. My auntie is, she's not an Adventist or a Christian, and probably the last 6 months, she's been getting into a lot of conspiracy theories on YouTube. And I've read The Great Controversy, and I certainly believe that behind closed doors, there are people that are pulling strings, and we're coming to the close of probation, and Jesus is returning soon, right? But my auntie, who's not an Adventist, not a Christian, she's watching all of this content, and she's sharing these links with me, and I'm asking her the question, like, so what? Like, what do I do with this? How does this enrich my life? How does this make my life more hopeful, more meaningful? I've learned stuff, but so what, right? And what I'm trying to help her understand is that there's a bigger picture. There's a great controversy. There's good and there's evil. And it's not about just sharing stuff for sharing stuff's sake, but how can we share wholesome content? Videos that will build people and not tear people down, that will give people hope and meaning, as opposed to just leaving them thinking, well, that's it, everybody's against me, and there's no hope, and that's it, right? So it's just choosing what you share with people and trying to find what is appropriate to really, you know, send on a WhatsApp message or send on a Facebook post. The last thing I'm going to share is just this beautiful passage, I think, that Ellen White wrote. It says, let every worker in the master's vineyard study, plan, and devise methods to reach the people where they are. Christ did not follow merely one method. In various ways, he sought to gain the attention of the multitude. I love that quote. I think it's so beautiful because it really just puts us in a place of wanting to use as much as we can around us to communicate the gospel. When you use technology, how can you have that balance in your life? It's not about running away from it. It's not about running to it, but how can you use it to amplify your life? How can you use it to spiritually edify yourself, to listen to wholesome content, wholesome videos, wholesome music, as opposed to just kind of putting in a drawing and ignoring that it exists? I want to encourage you to embrace it for yourself personally, but also as you share the gospel. But like I say, in a healthy way, in a balanced way. It's not good to be on your phone. We know this for hours and hours and hours. You know, to be on TikTok and you're scrolling through for 2 hours when you procrastinate and you should be making dinner, or you should be putting the kids in bed, or you should be doing this. And we procrastinate, we scroll through Facebook or WhatsApp or this or that, and we just kill time. And you get to 10 o'clock in an evening, you think, what on earth have I used my time for today? And we say, Lord, I just didn't have the time. But the truth is, you probably spent 3 hours on social media that day. And you don't always realize, because it's like 20 minutes when you're getting ready to jump in the bath, and it's like 10 minutes when you're on the toilet, and it's 15 minutes when you're walking to work, and all those minutes, they add up. And you kind of think, well, maybe as I'm walking to work, how can I use that 15 minutes to have listened to a small sermon? How could I have used that 5 minutes instead of scrolling through Instagram or Facebook? How could I have used that to have shared something really wholesome with my friend who isn't a Christian or an Adventist? I hope I didn't overcomplicate the subject tonight. And I really want to give a little bit of balance and context to this conversation. Because I know that it's really easy to fling from one extreme to another. And I'm really biased. You know, I'm a product of my generation. I just love technology. But I know even in my own life, you have to manage it in a healthy way. And so I really don't want to run to an extreme with you this evening, but to encourage you to do so really in a wholesome and healthy, in a spiritually uplifting manner. Pray God blesses you as you come to the end of your series on Sabbath and you look at talents in your last of your 80s. And I trust that you've had a wonderful spiritual journey thus far and you continue to bring it through on Sabbath, and you wrap it up in a wonderfully beautiful spiritual way as well. God bless.